Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. This is your host, Josh Rosenberg. I am so psyched and excited to be here for this episode with Steven Severin and James Miles of Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival taking place September 2nd and 3rd in Seattle. If you are a new Roadcase listener, if you're new to Roadcase, welcome to the show. If you are a returning or longtime listener, thanks so much for your support. I'm really psyched to have you back for this episode. There's a number of different ways that you can get involved in the Roadcase community and help support Roadcase. Really easy way to do that is visit us on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Please give us a follow there. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can visit our website. We're at www.roadcasepod.com. If you'd like to send us an email with some questions, comments, concerns, anything you'd like to know about the show, I'd be happy to answer it. You can send that email to info@roadcasepod.com. Another great way to help support Roadcase, because we really do rely on the support of you listeners to do just a couple things that really help out Roadcase, one of which is to subscribe to Roadcase on your favorite listening platform, the one you're listening to on right now. If that happens to be Spotify, you'll see there on the Roadcase homepage, there's a box that says follow. It's as easy as clicking that to subscribe to Roadcase. Really helps out the show. And on Apple Podcast, if you can go up into that upper right-hand corner, see that little check mark or a plus, you just click on that and you will subscribe to Roadcase as well. Really helps out the show to do that. So thank you very much for your help in doing that. And doing that will allow you to receive updates when new episodes come into the world. Another great way to help support Roadcase is to rate and review this podcast on your favorite listening platform. So on Spotify, it's super easy. Underneath that follow box that I already mentioned, there's a little box with some stars. Just click on that. It's as easy as that to rate Roadcase. On Apple Podcasts, just scroll up a little bit from the Roadcase homepage. You'll see some stars and a place to write a review. You can smash a bunch of those stars and write a review, anything, couple of words. Really helps out the show, and I appreciate those that have done that, and thanks in advance if you haven't and plan on doing it. Thanks so much. Really helps out Roadcase. So we're going to talk about Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival on this episode. It takes place September 2nd and 3rd in Seattle, Washington, up in the beautiful northwest corner of this country. We're really happy to have Steven Severin and James Miles on the show. Going to chat with both of them. Steven is a co-president of a festival producer, New Rising Sun. He's also the director of music programming for Bumbershoot. James Miles is executive director of Third Stone, which is the nonprofit arts and education arm of Bumbershoot. And Bumbershoot will feature musical guests this year, such as Seattle's own Slater Kinney, as well as Sunny Day Real Estate, Band of Horses, Brittany Howard, The Revivalists, Duran Jones, and Fatboy Slim, among others. Bumbershoot's mission, four simple concepts, but very important: community, education, accessibility, and the arts. Bumbershoot truly represents what it means to be an artist, and you'll learn more about why I'm saying that. They lead with arts at Bumbershoot, and it's just absolutely fascinating. I have a strong connection to arts as well as music, and you'll learn why in this episode. Both Steven and James have multiple decades of experience doing what they both do. Steven has run several local Seattle venues for quite some time now: Numos, Barboza, and the Runaway Bar. If you've visited Seattle or live up there, you know those amazing venues. And James is also known as Fresh Professor. He worked as an educator for over 20 years in New York City before moving to Seattle in 2016. And James has a super fresh take, true to his moniker, on education, music, and the arts, and is a truly, truly fascinating human. Bumbershoot. So bumbershoot is a British term for umbrella, for those that don't know, and it is truly an umbrella. Literally, it's a play on Seattle's reputation of being a place where it rains a lot, although I'm assured that there will be good weather on September 2nd and 3rd of this year. But also figuratively, an umbrella being an overarching concept of inclusivity at this festival. And from what I've learned through this episode and from these two stellar individuals, it really has a strong commitment to inclusivity. The arts and community and education, they really support local artists in Seattle as well. I really love that they're putting that into play at Bumbershoot. It's so cool that they're having a festival with not only big names, but also striving to support local artists and also local arts as well. And it's really going to be a fascinating festival. I know that you're going to learn a ton about it here and a ton about these amazing artists and about what it takes to put together a festival, an arts and music festival like this. And it's really, really fascinating. Thanks again for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Really psyched that you're all along, and thanks so much for your support. And I want to send a special thank you to Stephen Severin and James Miles of the Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival for being here on this episode of Roadcase. And here we go. Hey guys, thanks for joining Roadcase. So great to see you, James, Stephen. How are you guys all doing?
Very well. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
75 and sunny in Seattle.
There you go.
Just like everybody else in the country believes.
Yep.
It's 70 and raining here in Chicago. And James, you're from Chicago too, right?
I'm a Chicago Cubs fan.
Oh, right.
I hope you're a Cubs fan or White Sox. Which one?
I'm not from here originally, and I formerly lived on the north side. I really don't have a lot of skin in the game. I've gone to both. So
yes.
But yeah. I mean, I'm not from Chicago. So, you know, as you know, if you're from Chicago, you got to put on a hat.
You got to put on a hat.
Yeah. But I'm not from here. I don't feel like I need to put on a hat. So I can.
No, you're good. You're good.
And now I'm excused. I say, well, I'm not a native Chicagoan. And everyone's like, okay, cool, fine. You're off the program.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can go to either stadium. And I live in the South Loop. So I'm actually, it's super convenient to go to the Sox stadium, whatever it's called now. Super mega something corporation.
Super mega Soldier Field ish. Something,
right? Yeah. And the Bears are moving out of town. The negotiations just got moved forward or something like that. I don't know. I saw as a headline somewhere. I don't know.
Right. So,
Stephen, and you're a Seattle native. I was gonna say, are you Seattle native?
30 years.
Oh, okay.
So over half my life, at least.
Oh, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the Bay in California.
Ah, cool.
And then I went to high school in Arizona.
Ah, all right. A
town called Chandler.
Oh, that's
moved out here.
Wow. There's a stadium in Chandler. That's why, that's the only reason I know the name, where there used to be.
Yes. When I lived there, there was absolutely nothing. A lot of dirt fields and a lot of trailers. Yeah. Like, it was not what it is. I basically left, and apparently all this tech moved in because they don't charge the same kind of taxes that they do in other places.
Yeah,
so all these big companies moved in, and now it's in the top 10 for cost of living in the entire country, which is just baffling to me.
Right.
It blows my mind.
Yeah. The top 10 for cost of living, I guess maybe because they weren't taking in taxes over time, and now they're just shoving that cost down to the individuals. Is that?
Yep. That's pretty much it.
So did your parents
play the game?
Yeah. Were your parents in tech and then moved out there? Is that why you mentioned that and took you out? And were you in high school? There was a connection there?
No, just living in California. I lived in Oakland, and just not necessarily that I got into so much trouble, but there was a lot of trouble around.
Uh-huh.
And so my folks moved to Arizona a little bit on a whim, I think. I think they were trying to just get out of the Bay and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And just got you out of whatever, I guess that was a good thing, right?
Yeah. To them, that was the good thing. I mean, I liked it. I mean, I had a good time in Arizona. I actually got in way more trouble in Arizona than I did in California. So I don't know that it worked so well, but, you know, it all led to me living here for 30 years, which is kind of baffling.
Yeah. End product seems pretty good. I mean, and James, what neighborhood you grew up in?
I grew up in the north side of Chicago in Lincoln Park.
Oh, yeah. Right there. Yeah.
Yeah, it was called Boys Town, lovingly, in the 70s and 80s. And then when I left, I didn't know that that was maybe a derogatory term for the neighborhood I grew up in.
Oh.
But yeah.
Well, Boys Town is now like gay area up by like Belmont and Halsted. Is that,
That's where I grew up.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Right,
all right.
Right off Broadway and Aldine.
Oh, I call I
thought
that was like more like Lakeview area. Ultimate, like big picture, you know.
Big picture.
Yeah. Or Wrigleyville or whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. All right. You were down in the thick of it. So I got something in common in terms of like growing up with both of you guys. I'm from LA. And I got tons of family in the Bay Area and in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
So I spend a lot of time out there. And I've been in Chicago for 22 years. So but you guys, more importantly, Bumbershoot is coming back, right? I mean, tell me, we're going to get into the connection and why you both all are here and a little bit of your backgrounds and how that all comes together. But just to kind of set the groundwork here, I don't know if you guys want to take, I'll throw it to either of you. If I throw it to the wrong person, let me know. Let's run it like that and, you know, happily interject, you know, be amongst the two of you or with me, if you got something to say, that's all good. But why don't you tell me, maybe Stephen, about sort of where we are with Bumbershoot now, kind of over the past several years, as I know this is kind of a key year for Bumbershoot for a number of different reasons.
Yeah, so I'll go back a little bit further to kind of paint a picture. Bumbershoot, it's in its 50th year. We all know that, which is a pretty crazy time to come in and take an institution and be like, hey, we're going to make it new. In 03 to 08, I worked with them, helping with like programming, I was running a venue. And so I like talk about, you know, what artists are cool, what they should be, you know, looking at. And they were, the whole festival model was changing and it was becoming 03. It was becoming a much bigger thing where people were starting to put more festivals around in different places. It's like, you know, everything starts in 92 with Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing, you know, more pop up here and there. And then as 03, between 03 and 08, you started to see the model get bigger, like starting to go to bigger bands. And what Bumbershoot has always been is a community led group and a festival that was for the people by the people. And it started changing out of that model and going to larger artists and spending more money. So the ticket price raised, like it used to be a free festival and the city of Seattle used to fund it. They used to pay for all of it. That number dwindled down, the size of the artists went up, and the whole model around the country, everybody was just going with bigger, bigger artists. One of the last years I was there, we had the chance to book Kanye on the main stage. And they wanted the most money that they had ever, way more than they had ever paid an artist. And I was telling them, I was like, look, he just dropped his first record. His second record is about to come out. This is going to be huge. You're going to have 22,000 people losing their fucking minds. You need to do this. But people above him are like, we can't pay that much money. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And they did. And it was amazing. And we actually had Tribe Called Quest that year as well, which I had been working on for 2 years because it was their reunion back. And that was also sold out. And so, like, you started having all this success of, like, the bigger you went, the greater the turnout. And that went that way for a while. And then being in the Northwest, we have back then.
And just to back it up for a sec, that's when it was still free?
No, okay. It was, I think it stopped being free in like 1980.
Oh, it was okay.
Like $2.
Yeah.
Or like $3. But it kept going. It kept going up, and it started going up a lot faster because the artists got bigger.
Right.
And it seemed that's what people wanted.
Okay.
And then at some point that stopped being as important. And then we're on Labor Day, and historically there could be a lot of rain on Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years got rained out. I remember one particular year eating a burrito and watching my burrito fill up with water and just being like, this is crazy.
That's an acquired taste.
Yeah. And they lost so much money. So much money.
Yeah.
Because it's not a festival that sells out. It's a gigantic space.
Yeah.
That's not a field. It has all these little pockets.
Right. Oh, and I might as well mention that I was at Bumbershoot once. I could have said this at the top, late 90s. So I don't know what size it was or where it was then or what, but yeah.
Most people consider the late the 90s as the heyday. Uh-huh. Like that is when it was, like Rolling Stone called it the mother of all festivals in the 90s. That's when it was really doing its thing.
Uh-huh.
And then AEG came in to take over because they wanted to have more of a foothold in the market.
Right.
And that was the time that festivals started imploding all across the country. Like everybody had a festival, and it's really hard to make money on a festival.
Yeah.
And so the model stopped working, and we've seen it stop working all across the country, and it definitely stopped working. I mean, the numbers went from, they used to do 45,000 people a day,
mm-hmm.
and it ended at like 7.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw a massive change, and it's really hard to change in real time and predict what is happening, like what's coming up. Hindsight 2020, all that shit.
Yeah.
So, and it's not what AEG does. Like, they're probably the best concert promoter in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to throw big events.
Yeah.
But that's not what Bumbershoot is. Bumbershoot is a community play. It's a community led organization. That's what people want. They don't. Yes, they want to see Lizzo and LCD Sound System and stuff, but they care more about it feeling like it's part of the Northwest.
Right.
And so that's where we stepped in.
Yeah, I'd be hard pressed to think that you can kind of do both. I mean, I guess what you're trying to achieve is doing both, making it a community event, but with huge acts. But that's a tough, that's kind of a tough road to follow, right? I mean, that's a tightrope walk. It's tough to do. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So where do you feel that you're at right now in the evolution of this festival, and why is the 50th anniversary going to be a blowout and so important?
I've been in the music industry close to 30 years now. I've got to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I run my own festivals, my own venues. This was a way to be able to come in and make a much larger impact. And that was the whole idea of coming in. We're like, okay, we're going to bring Bumbershoot back to its roots, but move it to the 21st century.
Mm.
Like, I'm not doing the mamas and papas. Like, I'm not going to have Edgar Winter up there or,
what? You know, I love it.
Yeah, Mahal. Really.
Yeah.
They told me we're going to have.
I was looking for Edgar Winter.
Right. Well, I know your guys' deep devotion to Hendrix now, considering the names of the two companies that are going on. I know that much.
Hey.
Oh.
Someone's got their history. All right. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And so I was talking with somebody the other day, and they asked me what success was. And I was like, we've already succeeded. We set out about almost 3 years ago now with a plan of how we wanted Bumbershoot to be.
Mm.
We wanted to lower the ticket price, which we started with $50 for the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Lowest ticket it's been in over a decade. and 95% lower than anywhere around the country.
True.
We wanted to bring it back to discovery, discovering new bands. Like, you may not know who Jacob Banks is. Mm-hmm. Jacob Banks plays Seattle. He sells out the Showbox. It's 1,000 tickets.
Yeah.
He's not a huge name, but he's a name that people like, because he can do 1,000 tickets to most markets. Mm. But it's something when people hear it, they're going to be really excited. So we try to bring it back more to a sense of discovery.
Yeah.
And with that, also a major focus on the Northwest. Like, we want to really showcase, and we're doing this with our artists and also with all the people that, or most of the people that we hire, that we have a lot of talent in the Northwest. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to New York or LA to be in the music industry. You can do it and be here. Mm. And then that was the other part of creating the Bumbershoot Workforce Development Program that James and Hilaire are in charge of, and giving an opportunity to bring more people into our industry, as we are in a pretty bad situation across the country of not having enough people, and giving people from underserved communities a chance to come into our industry and train to be the next event producers.
Yeah.
So that's what we wanted to do almost 3 years ago, and we've nailed all of it. Ticket sales, whatever. If you come by the tickets, that's great. That's how we'll be able to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But succeeding was in taking this vision that we had and making it happen. And we did it. And we did it with nothing. We had no company. We had no time. We didn't have any money. The three principals had never worked together before and hardly even knew each other. So it was a really interesting
The affordability, inclusivity, and what's the third one?
Community, accessibility, arts, education.
Oh, I completely blew that. Those were other good principles that I came up with that I saw. Like, yeah. Say them again, James.
Yeah. It's community.
Yeah.
Education.
Yeah.
Accessibility, right. And the arts.
And so, James, you're at Third Stone, which is a nonprofit organization based in Seattle. Correct. And you have an amazing educational background. As an educator in New York City, as I understand, you're known as the Fresh Professor, which I love. Everyone go to the website Fresh Professor. I'm caught a little bit of your TED talk on putting hip hop into the curriculum, which I fucking loved. And
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was super, super cool, super great stuff, and so applicable to using music as a means of education and just making education relatable
and engaging. That's it, right? We want people to be engaged, or young people to be engaged in the process of learning, and you use the culture that they're living in, whether it's their home culture or the culture they digest on social media or the music, as a way to engage them in content.
Right.
So also, I got to plug my book, Gotta Stay Fresh, comes out December 5th, Teacher Creative Materials.
Say the name again.
Gotta Stay Fresh.
Gotta Stay Fresh. Okay.
Gotta Stay Fresh. Book coming out later this year. Perfect for anyone working in the K-8 space.
Focusing on kind of the new vision of education and making it relatable, the things that you've talked about.
Yeah, we'll have some practical guidelines on how to use hip hop and youth culture in the classroom,
right.
And also some great anecdotes, all based in evidence and neuroscience on how hip hop really affects the brain and the body and behaviors for young people.
Interesting.
So just got to plug myself for a bit.
No, hey, that's why you're here, man. And it's interesting shit. It's not like, and we can talk about it more, but tell me a little bit about how you kind of dovetail the principles of Bumbershoot to what and what your purpose is within the context of this Bumbershoot Music and Arts Festival, and what Stephen was talking about, making it more relatable and also sort of a local arts festival. I'm especially interested in maybe you can touch upon that way to make music more accessible for those locally. I find that interesting what Stephen said about that, you know, it does, you don't necessarily have to be in New York. You don't have to be in LA. You don't have to be in Nashville. You might think it might help, but right. It's doable elsewhere. Not everyone can like pick up and move. Right.
Right.
So how is that? To, how is that kind of emphasis on local music and such and the arts a part of Bumbershoot this year?
Yeah. So I'm glad you asked that. So like Steven said, you know, creating those opportunities for young people.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved here to Seattle, we went to Bumbershoot and we were three of four people of color in the entire festival.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, we had just left to New York. We saw Talking Heads. We saw Hall & Oates. And it was a well-diverse crowd, people of all incomes and social status. The cost of getting Bumbershoot was really high, as Steven said. The engagement was very, very minimal. And I think this has just happened over time. Mm. We're trying to really create that accessibility. Another action that happened was I was talking to someone at Amazon, actually, about just like, oh, how'd you get into work here? I realized that no one at Amazon was from Seattle. So you had this combination of like, where's our creative sector, both digital design and performing arts and the visual arts, and no representation in terms of local talent. And I said, that's got to shift. Fast forward maybe a year or two, and I meet Steven and Joe. They're like, we have this idea for programming. And I said, great, that's needed. That's, I love that, because I want every young person to say, I'm proud of the neighborhood I grew up in, whether they're broke, whether they're rich, to say, like, I'm proud of being from Seattle, and I'm going to show my love creatively in this field. So that was the impetus for my vision of how I can support the principal's idea of fomenting the success of this program. So just to give you some data, we have 16 students in our program for our pilot year. 75% of them are from low-income communities. 75% are queer. 50% are of color. And 50% are women. So demographically, across the board in the music industry, it's 86% white male and 6% queer. So we've already surpassed those metrics of inclusivity and equity in terms of the music industry.
Yeah, totally. You're trying to bring all those percentages and make them the same, basically. Like,
try to be, just make, like, them the same.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
We don't want a preponderance of any one person in this industry. We want everyone to see themselves, like the name Bumbershoot says, everyone under our umbrella, right, of production. So arts, accessibility, community education, that's really what excited me about this new iteration of Bumbershoot and what it could be and what it should be. So we're also working to make it accessible for everyone, you know, with captioning, with interpretation, with maps that are really specific. So that kind of answered your question.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm curious. Did you move to Seattle for this opportunity with you moved from New York to Seattle for this particular opportunity?
Now, I moved from New York to Seattle to work at Arts Corps, this organization in South Seattle.
Uh-huh.
So I had just left the Michael J. Fox show. My now ex-wife had just left the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. And we realized we didn't need to be in New York anymore.
What were you doing at the Michael J. Fox show?
I was on that show for the only season it was on. I was an actor. So when I wasn't teaching, I was acting.
Okay.
I was an original cast of In the Heights, Lin-Manuel Miranda's first play in the early aughts. Did two seasons of The Electric Company and then did 300 plus commercials. So many, every New York TV show I've been on. At a certain point, had a conversation with Michael J. Fox and Wendell Pierce from The Wire. And, you know, they were like, why are you doing this work? And I said, you know, I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And they said, what are you doing when you're not acting? And I said, I'm a teacher. Wendell Pierce said, I wish I could do that. I wish I could be a teacher. Michael J. Fox said, I want to put a face to Parkinson's, which is why I have the show in 2013. And I said, thank you, Michael J. Fox. Thank you, Wendell Pierce. I quit. And I walked off set.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't have a fixation on becoming famous is what the thing, like world exactly. Famous. I mean, you're famous in your own world. You do some great stuff,
world,
but you know,
yeah,
I mean,
you.
everyone's yeah. famous in their own world. Steven's famous
exactly.
in his own world. I mean,
yeah.
Right, Steven?
Yeah. You Steven's famous everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm famous in my own head. We'll stick there.
Let's stick there. Yeah.
we're all legends in our own minds.
Exactly. But I knew I wanted my passions drove me towards supporting young people as I matriculate through society and life. So I walked off set and I was like, okay, where can I do this? Built this program up in New York. The program got some success. The program brought me to Seattle. Pandemic hit and then Bumbershoot.
Yeah.
So this is the short trajectory of how I got here.
Interesting. So, Steven, let's go back to the lineup a little bit. We talk about some of the artists that are being featured this year, but how do you feel you're kind of walking that line between local? Obviously, you need to have kind of a couple large artists, right? It's more fun for people. You know, you can draw. It's those are the headlines. But, you know, you mentioned before about how that model kind of changed and also the emphasis on local artists and local activity in Seattle. Can you talk to me a little bit about what your mindset is in terms of setting the program for this event? And I know a lot of it has to do with availability, obviously, but kind of what's the general theory there?
Before we even had the RFP, I was kind of looking at this and being like, okay, if I'm going to create my own festival and I have all the options that I want, what am I going to do? Like, who am I going to go after? What styles? I figured out like what my budget roughly was going to be. And I started making a list of like different artists that fit in that. I was able to get 7 out of my 66 from the original choices of who I wanted to have.
That's humble.
I was pretty excited about that. But I knew that there was a lot of focusing on the Northwest. I knew that there were artists that could headline the event. I knew Sleater-Kinney was an artist that could headline any Bumbershoot that I was looking at doing. And they're down the street. They're from here.
Yeah.
I knew the same thing with Sunny Day Real Estate. And when I actually reached out about Sunny Day Real Estate, I had no idea that they were getting back together. That was before the reunion tour. And I was just taking a shot because, you know, why not?
Yeah.
I knew that I wanted to have a couple of big anchors as local headliners if I possibly could. And then I wanted to sprinkle them out through the rest of the festival. And I wanted to get as many smaller local artists a chance to get on the stage. Like, it's all artists that are working artists. They all play venues around the city. They may only play for 50 people, but they play regularly. And I wanted to be able to give them a shot to get on a stage, to be in front of people that didn't know who they were. One of my huge pet peeves, and a little bit of the reason that I quit booking my room Numos, was because I got so frustrated with agents that they wouldn't let me put local artists on anymore. You know, it's a two band bill that's touring, and I'd want to put on a third local artist because they don't get the chance to play in front of many fans. And I kept getting in arguments with agents and managers where they were just like, yeah, we don't want to have a third on there. Like, we don't trust that people are going to pick the right artists.
Yeah.
And we don't want to move our gear and all these other excuses. And I was
that's
just
fucked
like,
up. So the touring, the booking agents say, if you have a double bill, right? So you're assuming it's the booking.
Yeah.
It's the same booking agent for both. Like, they're doing a dual tour or whatever they're doing. They would actually just say, no, you can't book a third. That's incredible.
This is across the whole country.
It's your fucking room.
And this happens all the time.
Oh, okay.
That is what I said.
Yeah.
And I started losing some shows because of it.
Interesting.
Because I put my foot down and I said no.
Right.
And so I really want to give the artists, all artists, a stage to be on, a way to get in front of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I think about the Head and the Heart. or Fleet Foxes. I used to put Fleet Foxes on all kinds of weird bills.
Yeah.
And had they not gotten in front of other people, they may not have gotten that chance, because you never know who's in the audience, who's going to see you. Who's
100%, 100%.
And that's why it was so important to have, which is basically 50% of our festival is local, like making sure those people are getting the chance to not only get on the stage, but to be in all of the advertising. I mean, millions and millions of people get to see our poster, and it has their name, Long Dark Moon. And people are like, what the fuck is Long Dark Moon?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm going to go check it out, or I'm going to go to their Spotify playlist and check it out. So it's giving them an opportunity that they might not have had before. And that's a really rewarding part of doing this festival.
Yeah, absolutely. James, so how, talk to me a little bit about all the programs at Bumbershoot that you're coordinating and how those sort of support local music efforts and.
For sure.
Yeah.
So right now we have the 16 interns working at the Crocodile and the Triple Door, two local venues. They're also going to be working at the Waterfront. And they were just at the Folk Life, which is a Memorial Day weekend festival.
Yeah.
So they're training in all aspects of everything that touches the microphone, except performance, right? So they're doing sound, doing lights, they're doing set, doing development, they're doing arts education programming, they're doing front of house, doing hospitality, they're doing back of house. They're learning all that goes into putting on a festival before they then work the festival alongside all of us. You know, they'll be doing a lot of running. They'll be doing a lot of heavy lifting, both literally and figuratively. But most importantly, they'll have access to the best promoters in the country that work Bumbershoot, Stephen being one of them. Just to know everything. So that's some of the programs. We'll also be doing a fashion show that's designed, curated by, and directed by a high school student featuring high school designers and high school models. That'll be a big function of the festival this year. And then of course the accessibility, that we're having. And we've been reaching out to the accessibility community, who have said they've never been spoken to about Bumbershoot in previous iterations, and here we are doing it. And that alone in itself, as Stephen said earlier, is a success.
Accessibility, right? To those with physical challenges or what have you, to be able to take part in it or enjoy.
Exactly.
Is that kind of exactly. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So not just physical challenges, but like neurodivergence.
Yeah.
So we will have a quiet space for people that get sensory overload. We'll have
I need one of those.
Yeah, you and I both.
Yeah. Either that or better earplugs.
Yep, that's something we're seeking to make sure people have access to earplugs, in addition to like captioning and ASL interpretation. We're hoping to hire a deafblind interpreter that can work with people that are both deaf and blind.
Oh wow. Like assign someone to that.
They do it like they sign into your hands.
Right.
So you can hear and see, or so they can translate what's happening.
I love when they have ASL interpreters at festivals. That is the most fun thing to watch. Especially when it's like there's some people that they're like actual entertainers. It's incredible.
Oh yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Our director of operations was telling us that there's some particular interpreters that are requested by every different venue.
Oh, I bet. There's a handful in the country of those people, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Cool.
So that's
did you get a good one for this festival or a couple?
Yeah, we're talking to them right now.
And so would you have that on like different stages, like one of these people on each different stage, or would you just have, are you able to get a number of them that are assigned to particular, to each assigned to the stage?
We're getting like 8 of them assigned to the headlining stage.
Okay.
Yeah. For this year. Year two, 8,
because you can't like do like, you need a break, I guess. Right.
You need a break.
You're a performer, literally.
Right.
Wait, you're performing. Okay. This is interesting though. So how do they have like a teleprompter with the song, with the lyrics in front of them? They're not expected to know every lyrics of every song, I would imagine, or.
It depends.
Well, but then there might be some that don't like that. We don't know what the set list is going to be. It's too.
Exactly. Right? I mean, exactly. Yeah, so like with the headliners, they have an idea which songs they normally perform at concerts. they'll usually get the lyrics and the music well in advance, maybe a month, 2 months in advance to practice, to work on it. So that then when the show happens, they know the set. Captioners are a different story. The captioners are really live, doing captions live. They also know the music, but they're captioning like even like the in-between moments.
Wait, captioning. So wait, I was totally in the mode of thinking of an ASL interpreter with their hands.
Yeah, that too.
You're doing captioning. So how does that work?
There'll be captions on a large screen next to the stage.
Oh, interesting. So kind of like at the operas now, they're doing that.
Like at the operas now, exactly.
Right, right. Or they have the little readout at the Lincoln Center. I think they have, that's the Metropolitan Opera House. I think they had I haven't been there in quite a while, but they had the little captions on a readout in the seat in front of you.
Yes, something. We're not that fancy.
Well, I mean, there's wherever it's applicable. Huh.
Right.
How does that feel, Stephen? Does that feel like weird to like see, have captions on the stage?
I mean, I haven't got to actually see it in action yet, but it's pretty awesome.
That's a shitty question because it's like we're making it accessible for more people, right? I mean, who gives a fuck if it looks weird or not? I mean, okay, so the better question is like, what does it look like actually when it's up there? And like, I don't know.
Looks like, I don't know if it's like watching a movie in a different language.
And there's going to be, there's subtitles. There's going to be people that are like, why are you putting the words up there?
Hopefully. Well, the studies have shown that even more people that aren't deaf still use subtitles they used to.
It's like, wait, that's the lyric.
Yes, exactly. That's what's happening.
right. Interesting. Oh, that's great stuff. I know I'm ignoring you, Stephen, because like the art stuff is like all the ancillary stuff is so fucking cool. What about the arts factor? And I know there's all sorts of different art. There's a lot of pole dance. They got my attention in all the pole dancing stuff that's going on. It was like, talk to me. So that's not the only thing. And I'm just joking around. But I mean, what are some of the arts elements that are part of Bumbershoot that people can look forward to?
The only reason that Bumbershoot is actually happening is because of the arts. I ran my own festival called City Arts Fest. I ran it for 3 years. It was a similar to like a South by Southwest and all the different venues from 300 to 3,000 people. I did it for 3 years, and I've been around Capitol Hill Block Party for like 18 because it's my partner throws it and Numos is part of it. I had zero desire to do another festival. There was absolutely, I was like, I'm good. I scratched that itch. Let's go on and do something else. And then the idea came of putting an arts lens on everything that we do and making it more fun, which is what Bumbershoot used to be. It used to have a lot of visual and performing arts. Mm. And so once that came out, it was like, okay, I know the guy. I'm like, we need to go get this guy, Greg Lundgren, who is our creative director, who at the time told us hell no, because he was busy. He owns a bunch of other businesses that he runs, as well as he has worked with these type of organizations, including Bumbershoot, who give him a budget and then take it back. They'll say, well, we'll give you all of this money, create this. And then they're like, the very first thing they do is that you start chopping off is the arts, because you can't put a number on it. You can't say this many people are going to come for this sculpture because you have no idea.
Yeah.
I can tell you exactly how many people are going to come see Lizzo,
right?
What the ticket price is going to be and how quickly it's going to sell out.
Right.
So
being able to love the arts, but you don't lead with it. Right. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right.
We can't.
I mean, you could lead with it, but the fact of the matter is,
we did. Our first announce was that we're coming out, the Bumbershoot is back, and that here's all the arts that are coming. And we didn't announce the music lineup for another month because we wanted people to know that the arts are so important that they're coming first, because people are going to come for the bands. People are going to come and see Fatboy Slim because it's Fatboy Slim.
Yeah.
They may not come to see roller skating. That may not be a thing that people think about, but once they're there and they see the Fashion District and the burlesque karaoke program, mm-hmm. and the double Dutch jump ropers, yeah. and the
drag show, the cat circus.
Yeah. The cat circus.
Yes.
I mean, that's more popular than.
Okay. Rattle off all the names together, guys. Ready, go.
I mean, there's so many different visual. There's an event called Out of Sight. It's going to be 250 contemporary artists that all have pieces of visual art in one room. It's going to be phenomenal and mind blowing and over the top. It's a huge feat in of itself. And bringing all of that visual and performance arts makes it fun again.
Yeah.
Like watching people on a pogo stick do backflips and stuff. Like, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having a wrestling rink where you have like, a Bill Gates versus like, Steve Ballmer or Elon Musk or something wrestling or Eddie Vedder,
you know,
like that's fun.
Yeah.
And that's what festivals used to be. They used to be fun. They kind of seemed to lose that and they got so serious.
Yeah. Why do you think that was? I love the melding of art, like sports and arts or music and arts. I mean, yeah. I got to tell you, briefly, like in 1984, when I was between my sophomore and junior years of college when I went to UC Santa Barbara, I worked with the Olympic Arts Festival. Like I was like 20 at that time. I drove a van. There was an Olympic Arts Festival. It was fantastic. This guy named Robert Fitzpatrick, I think it was his name, was the head of that. He started Euro Disney and they created this arts festival in conjunction with the LA Summer Olympics. And I got to drive all these amazing arts groups around, members of these arts groups from their hotel to their venue. I'd take them sightseeing once in a while. But anyway, that melding of arts and sports or arts, bringing people that want to be entertained to a certain extent, but also are proactive enough to like buy a ticket and go to a festival because they want to see artists. They know that they're going to see new things. And part of that new thing is going to be the arts as well. And tying all those together, you know, you get the people in the door with the big names, but then you wow them with all the other cool shit that's going on.
That's it.
The reason people don't is because it's scary.
That don't what?
Like, that don't bring arts into.
Oh, that organ from an organizer's perspective. Well, yeah. Okay. If it's scary or it's just not set up to do that. Yeah. There's a number of different reasons, but you think it's because it's scary. So tell me about that. It's interesting.
Spreadsheet economics.
Yeah.
I look at my spreadsheets all the time and I'm looking at my budgets and trying to figure out how I don't lose hundreds of thousands or $1 million in my first year so I can come back next year and keep doing this for another 50.
Right.
That's and I'm always looking at where can I shave money to make sure that I'm going to be profitable or that I'm not going to lose so much money out of the gate. Because most festivals lose money the first few years.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of it. It takes a while to build everything up. And people get scared. They're like, they don't know how much a cat circus is going to bring people in.
Right. But yeah.
You can, I rent a venue. I know what every artist is going to do because I can look around the country and see Nashville, Minneapolis, Detroit, New Orleans.
Right.
Okay. Arches of Loaf did that many tickets.
Yeah.
That's how many it'll do.
So, I'm talking about it in this theoretical kind of fun way of like, let's marry music with arts. But what you're saying, it's tough to do that. Like, it's just not the reason why you do it is because you can sell the music, but you can also present the arts.
Yeah. And it's what we wanted to do. I mean, that was our idea. We didn't want to do a normal music festival. I mean, people are like, why don't you go get a Field Incarnation and throw 40,000 people in it and have LCD sound system? And I was like, that does not sound like fun to me. That I don't think I'm good enough at that. I mean, probably fine, but that's not my area of expertise. That's not where I'm going to thrive.
Right.
Bringing the communities together of music and art because of being around as long as I have and getting the right people involved, That's what I'm good at. And I think that's what people want. And we will find out by September 4th if that is what people want, because it'll mean that they came and checked it out.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about Amazon's involvement. Obviously they've contributed some money to this. They made ticket prices more reasonable. How much is that their involvement enabled you to help James do what he's doing?
Amazon was huge. Amazon was really an awesome thing. And we went to Amazon because we know what the narrative is of them coming in and how it's affected our cost of living. Mm. And that goes with all the tech companies. It's not just Amazon. Like, we, over the last, 20, 30 years, we've become a tech city.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the artists and the weirdos that made Seattle cool couldn't live here anymore, because you start at Amazon at like $150,000 a year as a programmer.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Like, the people that I pay to run my bars, they don't make that kind of money. So how are they going to compete? So we went to them and we were like, hey, we want to bring Bumbershoot back and we want to make it affordable. We want to make it so that the average person can just come and check it out. Doesn't have to be $200 to go see so-and-so bands, but we need help. If we're going to sell X amount of tickets and we're only going to go in at $50, we need a lot of money to do that. And we want you to be that person. And then we will tell people that you're the reason that we were able to get the ticket price down to the lowest it's been in over a decade. It's a decade, but after the pandemic, all expenses went up 30 to 35%.
Right, right.
So the festival would have cost a whole lot more. And they understood. They understood from the get-go. They were like,
yep,
this sounds like a great idea.
And, James, how did that give you – go ahead, James.
No, I was saying, and that investment also helped us provide free tickets to low-income communities.
Oh yeah, you gave away like thousands of free tickets.
We're giving away 5,000 tickets.
Wow,
5,000 tickets.
Wow. James, tell me just like, what does it look like from your perspective to create this arts festival? Where do you start? What do you put it like at a general call? Is it analogous to promoting a show?
It's analogous to promoting a show, or from my background, producing a play. That's what it's like. You need all hands on deck, all with the same vision.
Yeah.
You come in together, you each have your roles, but you're always communicating weekly. The hours are long, they're intense. The reward is very high. It's super exciting. But the first thing I start with is the people, right? The people that I'll be working with and people I'm talking to for 10 hours a day, 6 days a week for 7 months. Those are the people that I'm like, all right, who's in my area?
Yeah.
Are we vibing? Are we on the same page?
Right.
What did you have for breakfast? Who's your favorite band? What did you listen to when you were young?
Yeah.
Like, getting that sense of community is the most important. And then you build from there. You grow that team so that we're all sharing literal and figurative bread together. So we're breathing together.
Yeah.
At the same time, we're understanding how we think. You build that strong foundation, and then you can do whatever you want. Right. You can do whatever you want. You'll hit some hiccups in the road. Like,
right.
you can't predict, as Steven said, you can't predict the weather.
Yeah.
But what we can predict is how well your team is managed. And to me, that's number one. And then you bring that same kind of ethos to the young people into your employ. They say, oh, it doesn't have to be horrible. It could be a positive working environment. Yes, it can. Don't you want to work with people like this?
Yeah.
And then that younger generation spreads out across the region, across the country, and they do the same thing.
So, hey, I'm still talking about my experience at Olympic Arts Festival from 1984, man.
Exactly.
And I just drove a goddamn fucking van and like helped backstage a little bit, but for some massive international acts.
Yeah.
So, and it turned me on. It turned me on. Like, I'm still think about it to this day. So,
right.
In terms of having the people that you're working with, interacting with them, that's a true way to really engage the local community. Tell me about some of the arts events or acts, if that's the right term, that you're most excited about. And I want to interrupt, like, Stephen, maybe you want to jump in before we get to that. The weather, though. I mean, are these things, are we under tents and stuff? I mean, it is bumper shoot, so people are going to be bringing their umbrellas. But yeah, shit.
I just had a buddy from San Diego who runs a venue there reach out and ask if he could have his weather back.
Yeah, if you want to move bumper. Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the weather
because
changes.
Because it's been so beautiful.
All right, don't, let's not jinx it. Don't jinx it, man.
In the Northwest. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
We're talking with meteorologists and like we're
what can be done. Like maybe Jeff Bezos can get involved and change the weather, you know.
With his weather balloons.
There you go. Exactly. Right.
It's looking good.
Right. All right. Good. We're going to have good weather that weekend. Yeah. So, James, what are some of the things that you're most excited about? Sorry to go on that little detour, but it was the weather good. Thing.
I'm excited to see community present. So in addition to the acts, you know, the cat circus that we mentioned, super excited to see that.
What is that?
I have no idea, but I'm very interested. Same with the double Dutch. Same with the roller skating. The extreme pogo dancing, the witch's circle, also don't know what that entails.
Double Dutch and pogo dancing. Okay, so let's talk about like the urban lore and things to do. Like double Dutch, man. Those girls that do that on the street and like up like in the Bronx or wherever, that blows my fucking mind.
Yes, that's a skill set that not many can ever emulate. It's amazing.
It's uniquely identified with that level, that growing up in an urban environment, doing that on the street. It's like going back to the Spike Lee movie. What? God damn it.
Yeah. Crooklyn. It's very much
the one
like
before that. The one,
Do the Right Thing.
Yeah. Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing.
Right. Yeah. Scraping the empty can, cutting it, making a circle, squirting the fire hydrant. You're going to have like fire hydrant hose.
Oh yeah. Which I've done. We can do that to the fountain.
Right. So double Dutch and, the other one that came to mind with that, that you said.
Oh, the roller skating,
pogos too, yeah,
and pogo dancing, right? Pogo jumping.
I sense a little bit of a theme. You're bringing New York to Seattle a little bit. It feels like
we're bringing back everything. You know, Greg says when people walk into the campus, we want them to identify as an artist, even if they've never identified as an artist beforehand. So we're trying to make everyone that touches Bumper Shoot saying like, you are an artist too.
Yeah.
Maybe your art isn't well known, but you're an artist. People that throw the sandwich boards up in the air to direct, that's art in itself.
That throw the what? Hold on 1 second. What?
You know, the sandwich boards with the spinning signs.
Oh, that shit. Wait.
Spinning signs.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Wait. There's an exhibit of spinning sign people? No.
There is.
Oh, my God.
There is. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm on board.
Yeah. So it's like, how do you see yourself as an artist and how do the artists see themselves in you? That's what I'm excited about, to see that glimpse of wonder for all the participants that come into Bumper Shoot. They say, oh, I can see myself here. Whoever I identify as my specialty, as my hobby, as something I enjoy that may or may not be well recognized. I see myself here. I feel comfortable. And also, to Stephen's point, it's back to that Seattle kind of weird. We are going to be super weird and super fun. And we're trying to harken back to those days of when Bumper Shoot first started, when the mayor said, turn the lights off before you leave, when the Office of Arts and Culture was founded, when Folk Life was founded, when the arts became inculcated into the culture of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
We're harkening back to those days and saying like, we haven't gone. They've been dormant for a while thanks to COVID, but we're back. We're back.
Yeah. That's exciting. That's really that's some really exciting shit. Something less exciting though, Stephen, I'd be remiss. I'm really curious about what happened in 2019 at the festival, like just briefly. I mean, with the barricade. And it wasn't, I saw some films, it wasn't like one of those like hardcore barricades, right? Was that the issue that occurred? Not to bring up bad shit, but I'm really curious.
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't part of it. All I knew and heard was that a barricade had fallen and there was, you know, issues, but I actually,
yeah, there was, I'll mention there was nobody seriously hurt, but okay. So, but you right. weren't yeah. you weren't on the ground at that point. I went and I like looked at a couple of interviews from people that were there at the time. And, it showed one of those, like just those little barricades that you just see on the street at like a street fest or something, right. Not one of those hardcore ones that you, and then I yeah. guess there was not anticipated that there was going to be a surge and that'll just, yeah, I'm always, if I go to a small festival and it's like one of those easy barricades, like just a fence, I'm like, well, okay, don't push. Cause right.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's in the past. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah,
it's exciting stuff, guys. Wow. So, and obviously this is coming back now. Tell me, like, was there a bumper shoot last year or what are we talking now? Cause it started in 71 or something and it's 50. 71. We're like, so we skipped 2 years. Yeah. I'm just doing the easy math.
Right. We skipped 20, 21 and 22.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a big year, golden anniversary, the return. Seattle's got to be really excited, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The response that we got, which when I talked with the other two guys, I was like, when we roll this out, like put on your armor, because they're going to come at it with pitchforks, because everybody has an idea of what Bumbershoot should be.
Right.
And they're going to come after us and they're going to say some mean shit, and nothing happened. Nobody said anything like negative. They said negative things about what had happened in past, but not about what we were doing. There was a lot of, you know, crossing arms that like, we'll see.
Right.
But nobody was like, you guys suck, right. Which is, that was pretty amazing. So the response has been phenomenal, like way better than we expected. So we believe that we're creating the festival that the Northwest wanted. That was our idea. Like, what does the Northwest want? I've been around here for a really long time and I've heard people say all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
So it's like taking all of those little tidbits into knowing what we wanted to create. And
that's it.
And we've done it. So far, so good. Knock on some wood.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Exciting stuff, guys. I'm really, really happy for you both. And Bumbershoot is in good hands, both from a music and from an artistic perspective. It's just
appreciate that. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, just wonderful stuff. And Steven, you've been a fixture in Seattle for a long time, and I know this is gonna feel really, really good. And James, you're the fresh professor, man. What can I say? You know, go to James' website, freshprofessor.com, and check out all the amazing things that James has done, man. You've just done some great stuff. That. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's awesome, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about this. I'm super excited about Bumbershoot happening September 2 and 3 of 2023, just coming up. And we're praying for good weather, and I love 2 days versus 3 days. We can leave it at that too.
So do I.
And make sure that people go to bumbershoot.com to get tickets. Don't go anywhere else. We're not selling them anywhere else. Don't go to any other sites because you'll pay more. And you don't know the tickets are real. Only bumbershoot.com.
There you go.
Bumbershoot.com.
True words. Sounds great. Steven, James, awesome. Thanks for being here. Really a pleasure meeting you guys.
Thank you, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thanks right for having on. Us.
Yep. Take care, guys. Cheers.
Take care. Take care.
Okay, that was Steven Severin and James Miles of the Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival, which of course takes place in Seattle September 2nd and 3rd. It's the 50th anniversary of Bumbershoot, the comeback after being away for 3 years, and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. Like I said, it's super exciting. One of the things I find most interesting about Bumbershoot is really the local focus. I mean, there are so many different festivals that might come to towns near you, might come to your town. And, you know, they have the big names and the nationally major touring artists, those smaller artists that are showing up during the day, for example, are nationally touring artists. that's phenomenal. That's fantastic. You know, we have several festivals like that in Chicago. I really love the focus on bringing up acts and putting acts, local acts, in front of audiences. Stephen talked about that and how, you know, voiced a little bit of frustration as a local venue owner who books acts into his own venues, that sometimes it's difficult to just throw a smaller local artist in there as an opener for another double bill, for example. And some of those managers or booking agents, he said, and didn't mention any names, but just kind of the concept of they were like, no, we don't want another act on the bill. But so Stephen's pretty dedicated at having local artists and smaller artists and allowing them to gain access. And it's the Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival. They're leading with the arts at this festival, despite obviously a dedication to music as well. Even Stephen, who was the director of music programming for Bumbershoot, the music guy, was like, said, you know, the only reason Bumbershoot is happening is because of the arts. And that's like that's super, super cool. You know, they talked about the economic difficulties of leading with the arts. You know, you can't put like a major artist on the bill, that focuses on the arts. It's just much more difficult to do that, where you'll have larger artists and larger performing artists and musicians and bands that have a known drawing capability to draw an artist. And, that's just less risky. You know, as even Stephen was saying, like, he's looking at his spreadsheet constantly. But I love their dedication to affordability. They're also giving away over 5,000 tickets as well. That's due in large part to sponsorships from Amazon, from companies, local company in this instance, which is a fairly large company that I know all of you heard of, Amazon. And that is also a real strong component of Bumbershoot as well. And James is also using local arts groups and Double Dutch Jump Rope. He said a cat circus, acrobatic people on pogo sticks, etc. It's just going to be absolutely super cool, in addition to so many amazing artists at this 50th anniversary of Bumbershoot. Really looking forward to it. It's taking place September 2nd and 3rd in Seattle, and was just really great to hear a lot of what's going on behind the scenes, both from an arts and music perspective. And I'm really glad that you were all along for this episode, and that some of you even plan on going to Bumbershoot. It's going to be a great festival. I'm going to try to make it out there myself as well. And I want to thank all of you for being here for this episode. And thank you for your continued support of Roadcase. Give us a follow on the socials. We're at Roadcase Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And I want to send a special thank you to Stephen Severin and James Miles of the Bumbershoot Arts and Music Festival for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening, and I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod, and we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.